I thought that my already heavy heart must now burst with the sheer weight of my grief. I knelt on the terrace with my family scattered around me, and I wept. It was some time before I could bring myself to think about the cause of this tragedy. Then I stood up and went to one of the empty bowls that lay on the tiles. They had licked it clean, but I sniffed at it to try and fathom the nature of the poison that had been intended for me. The odour of soured milk disguised any other smell. All I knew was that it had been swift and deadly. I wondered who had placed the jug beside my bed. But it did not matter whose hand had carried the vessel to me. I knew with utter certainty who had given the order for it. "Farewell, my old darling. You are a dead man," Lord Intef had told me, and he had not waited long to transform the words into deed. The anger that seized me was a form of madness. It was aggravated by my unsteady state and somber mood. I found that I was shaking with a rage that I had never known before. I drew the little dagger from my belt, and before I realized what I was doing, I was rushing down the steps of the terrace with the naked blade in my hand. I knew that at this time of the morning Intef would be in his water garden. I could no longer bear to think of him as my Lord Intef. The memory of every outrage he had ever visited upon me, every agony and every humiliation, was bright and clear in my mind. I was going to kill him now, stab him 100 times through the cruel and evil heart. I was in sight of the gate to the water garden before I regained my sanity. There were 6 guards at the gate, and there would be as many more beyond. I would never get within dagger thrust of the Grand Vizier before they cut me down. I forced my flying feet to check and turn back. I slipped the dagger into the jeweled leather sheath and brought my breathing under control. I walked slowly back to the terrace and gathered up the pathetic bodies of my pets. I had planned to plant a row of sycamore trees along the border of my garden. The holes to take them had already been dug. The trees would never be planted now that I was leaving Karnak, and the pits would serve as graves for my beloved creatures. It was the middle of the afternoon before I had filled the last grave, but my rage was unabated. If I could not yet have my full vengeance, at least I could give myself a foretaste of it. There was still a little of the sour milk left in the jug beside my bed. I held the jug in my hands and tried to think of some way in which I could get it to the Grand Vizier's kitchens. It would be so fitting to pay him in his own vile coin, although I knew in my heart that the idea was futile. Lord Intef was far too cunning to be taken so easily. I myself had helped him devise the system he used to keep himself secure from poison and assassination. He could not be reached without much careful planning. What was more, he would be especially on his guard now. I would have to be patient. But that was impossible. Even if I could not kill him yet, I could exact some lesser payment as a deposit against what I was determined must follow. Still carrying the fatal jug, I slipped out of one of the side doors of the boys' quarters into the street. I did not have to go far to find a milkman surrounded by his flock of nanny goats. While I waited, he stripped the rich milk from the swollen udders of one of them, topping the jug up to the brim. Whoever had prepared the poison had used enough to murder 6 the citizens of Karnak. I knew that more than sufficient remained in the jug for my purpose. One of the Grand Vizier's bodyguards loafed at the door to Rasva's chamber. The fact that he had him under guard proved to me that Rasva was still valuable to Lord Intef, and the loss of his personal lieutenant would annoy, if not seriously discommode him. The guard recognized me and waved me into the sick room that smelled like a sty. Rasva lay on his filthy bed, basting in his own sweat. However, I could tell at once that my surgery had been successful, for he opened his eyes and cursed me weakly. He must also be so certain of his own eventual recovery that he need no longer toady to me. "Where have you been, you ballless freak?" he growled at me, hardening my resolve and ridding me of the last traces of any pity that I might have felt for him. "I've been in agony ever since you drilled into my skull. What kind of physician are you?" There was much more in the style, which I pretended to ignore as I unwound the soiled bandage from around his head. My interest was purely academic as I examined the small wound that the trepan had left in his scalp. It was another perfectly executed operation, and I felt a certain professional regret that it would be wasted. "Give me something for the pain, eunuch," Rasfer tried to seize the front of my tunic, but I was too quick for him and stepped back out of his reach. I made a fuss of shaking a few crystals of harmless salt from a glass vial into his drinking bowl and then topped it up with milk from my jug. "If the pain becomes too bad, this will relieve it," I told him as I set the bowl near to his hand. Even at this stage I could not bring myself to hand it to him directly. He heaved himself up on one elbow and reached for the bowl to guzzle it down. Before his fingers touched it, I pushed it out of his reach with my foot. At the moment I thought that this was merely a desire to prolong the anticipation, and I felt satisfaction at his distress as he whined at me, "Oh, good Taita! Give me the potion. Let me drink. This pain in my head will drive me mad." "First, let's talk a while, good Rasfer. Did you hear that the Lady Lostris asked for me as her parting gift from Lord Intef?" Even in his pain, he grinned at me. "You are a fool if you think he'll let you go. You are a dead man." "The very words Lord Intef used. Will you mourn for me, Rasfer? Will you weep for me when I am gone?" I asked softly, and he began to chuckle, then broke it off and glanced at the bowl. "In my own way, I've always been rather fond of you," he grunted. "Now let me have the bowl." "How fond of me were you when you castrated me?" I asked, and he stared up at me. "Surely you do not still bear a grudge for that? It was long ago, and besides, I could not disobey the orders of Lord Intef. Be reasonable, Taita, let me have the bowl." "You laughed as you cut me. Why did you laugh? Did you enjoy it so much?" He shrugged and then winced at the pain that the movement caused him. "I am a jovial man. I always laugh. Come now, old friend, say you forgive me and let me have the bowl." I nudged it towards him with my foot. He reached out and seized it, his movement still uncoordinated. A few drops slopped over the rim as he raised it greedily to his mouth. I didn't realize what I was about to do until I had leapt forward and struck the bowl out of his hands. It hit the floor without shattering and rolled into the corner, splashing milk up onto the wall. Rasfer and I stared at each other. I was appalled by my own stupidity and my weakness. If ever a man deserved a death by the agony of poison, it was this one. But then I saw again the contorted bodies of my pets strewn across the terrace, and I knew why I had not been able to allow Rasfer to drink. Only a fiend could commit such an act. I have too high a regard for myself ever to descend to the ignominy of the poisoner. I saw understanding dawn in Rasfer's bloodshot eyes. "Poison," he whispered. "The bowl was poisoned. It was sent to me by Lord Intef." I don't know why I told him this. Perhaps I was trying to excuse myself for the atrocity that I had almost committed. I don't know why I was behaving so strangely. Maybe it was still the after-effects of working the mazes. I staggered slightly as I turned for the door. Behind me, Rasfer began to laugh, softly at first, and then louder, until great gusty bellows of laughter seemed to shake the walls. "You are a fool, eunuch!" he roared after me as I ran. "You should have done it! You should have killed me, for now, as surely as I have a hole between my buttocks, I will kill you." As I had expected, when at last I returned to her chamber, my Lady Lostris was still asleep. I settled at the foot of her bed, intending to wait for her to wake on her own. However, the rigours and the exertions of the past day and night had been too much for me. I slumped down and fell asleep, curled like a puppy on the tiles. I woke under attack. Something struck the side of my head such a painful blow that I was on my feet before I was properly awake. The next blow took me across the shoulder and stung like the bite of a hornet. "You cheated me!" my Lady Lostris screamed at me. "You did not let me die!" She swung the fan again. It was a formidable weapon. The bamboo handle was as long as twice the span of my arms, and the comb at its head that held the fan of ostrich feathers was of solid silver. Fortunately, she was still groggy from the drug and from oversleeping, and her aim was erratic. I ducked under the blow, and the momentum of it swung her around so that she collapsed on the bed again. She dropped the fan and burst into tears. "I wanted to die. Why did you not let me die?" It was some time before I could approach her and put one arm around her to comfort her. "Did I hurt you, Taita?" she asked. "I have never beaten you before." Your first attempt was a very good one, I congratulated her ruefully. In fact, you are so good at it that I do not think you need to practice further. Theatrically, I rubbed the side of my head, and she smiled through her tears. Poor Taita. I do treat you so badly, but you did deserve it. You cheated me. I wanted to die, and you disobeyed me. I saw it was time to change the subject. Mistress, I have the most remarkable news for you, but you must promise to tell no one of it, not even your maids. Not since she had first learned to talk had she been able to resist a secret. But then what woman can? The promise of one had always been enough to distract her, and it worked yet again. Even with her heart broken and the threat of suicide hanging over her, she sniffed back the last of her tears and ordered, "Tell me." Recently I had accumulated a good store of secrets to choose from, and I paused for a moment to make my selection. I would not tell her of the poisoning of my pets, of course, nor of my glimpse of Tunnus. I needed something to cheer her rather than to depress her further. Last night I went to Pharaoh's bedchamber, and I spoke to him for half the night. The tears rose to the surface of her eyes once more. "Oh, Taita, I hate him. He's an ugly old man. I don't want to have to—" I wanted no more in that vein. In moments she'd be weeping again, so I hurried on. I worked the mazes for him. Instantly I had her complete attention. My Lady Lostris is totally fascinated by my powers of divination. If it were not for the deleterious effect that the mazes have upon my health, she would make me work them every single day. "Tell me, what did you see?" She was riveted. No thought of suicide now, all sadness forgotten. She was still so young and artless that I felt ashamed of my trickery, even though it was for her own good. "I had the most extraordinary visions, mistress. I have never had such clear images, such depths of sight. Tell me. I declare I will die of impatience if you don't tell me immediately. First you must swear secrecy. Not another soul must ever know what I saw. These are affairs of state and dire consequences." "I swear, I swear." "We cannot take these matters lightly. Get on with it, Taita. You're teasing me now. I order you to tell me this very moment, or, she groped for a threat to coerce me, "or I shall beat you again." "Very well, listen to my vision. I saw a great tree upon the bank of the Nile. Upon the summit of the tree was the crown of Egypt. Pharaoh. The tree was the king." She saw it at once, and I nodded. "Go on, Taita, tell me the rest of it." "I saw the Nile rise and fall 5 times. 5 years. The passing of 5 years." She clapped her hands with excitement. She loves to unravel the riddles of my dreams. "Then the tree was devoured by locusts, and thrown down and turned to dust." She stared at me, unable to utter the words. So I spoke for her. "In 5 years, Pharaoh will be dead, and you will be a free woman. Free from your father's thrall. Free to go to Tunnus, with no man to stop you. If you are lying to me, it will be too cruel to bear. Please say it is true." "It is true, my lady. But there is more. In the vision I saw a newborn babe, a boy child, a son. I felt my love go out to the infant, and I knew that you were the mother of the child." "The father? Who was the father of my baby? Oh, Taita, tell me, please." "In the dream I knew with absolute certainty that the father was Tunnus." This was the first deviation from the truth that I had allowed myself, but once again I had the consolation of believing that it was for her benefit. She was silent for a long time, but her face shone with an inner glow that was all the reward I could ever ask for. Then at last she whispered, "I can wait for 5 years. I was prepared to wait all eternity for him. It will be hard, but I can wait 5 years for Tunnus. You were right not to let me die, Taita. It would have been an offence in the face of the gods." My relief buoyed me up, and I now felt more confident that I would be able to steer her safely through all that lay ahead.